Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you Foundations in Faith. Join Monsignor Frank Lane as he offers insights into the readings heard at Mass. And now, Foundations in Faith with Monsignor Frank Lane.
This is Father Frank Lane, and we're continuing our program, Foundations in Faith. Today, we're going to continue to look at the Gospel of St. Mark, and still in the first chapter, this time verses 40 to 45. And it's a story of the cure of a leper, but there's all sorts of kind of interesting insights in this gospel into both the person of Jesus and how he responds to the condition of the world in which he lives. It also is a look into human nature, of course, that despite the great gift that the Lord gave to the leper, he disobeys him, and in so doing causes great difficulty for the Lord and for other people as well. So let's look at the gospel and see exactly what it is now that is going on. A leper came to Jesus and pleaded on his knees, "Lord, if you want to," he said, "you can cure me." Feeling sorry for him, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him. "Of course I want to," he said. "Be cured." And the leprosy left him at once, and he was cured. This is the first part of the gospel. And there is a problem with this, because as we know in the transcription of the texts over the years, that sometimes there are things that cause either bewilderment or seem inappropriate to a particular age and time. And so the transcribers, the translators, would oftentimes take liberty with some of the things. In the recent spate of modern scripture studies, much of the original texts have been much of the text has been restored. But in this particular case, there is a phrase here that has not been restored, and it still exists in the text as an error of transcription. And this gives a whole different look on who Jesus is. First of all, the leper comes to Jesus and pleads on his knees. He breaks all of the taboos. He breaks absolutely all of the taboos of the society concerning where lepers might be, what they might do, and so forth. Not all of the skin diseases, of course, in the early days were actually Hansen's disease, which leprosy is, we call that today. But in any rate, they were all lumped together, and they were isolated from the rest of the community. They had no way to control any kind of spreading of infection and so forth in those days, except isolation. And so they enforced isolation. The people had to live outside the regular communities. They had to live in little compounds of their own. There was all sorts of things that were unfortunate about how the leper had to be treated. And it was a disgusting disease in so many ways, because they had open sores and parts of their bodies would just simply have rotted and fallen away. But here a leper now comes to Jesus. He comes out of his isolation. And he comes out of his isolation because he is convinced that the power of the Lord will be able to save him. And this, I think, is something for us to ponder too. How convinced are we that the power of the Lord can save us from the evils that beset us? And we have to stop and think too that to what end do we ask for that kind of healing? To what end do we ask for an end of the evil that surrounds us in all of its forms, in all of its shapes? And I think that that we have to consider in our own lives what we ask the Lord for and why we ask it of him. Here the man is in absolute misery. And here the man, of course, in his faith, reaches out to Jesus Christ. And here's where the problem comes in, because then the text says, feeling sorry for him, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him. Of course I want to. But you know, this is one of those things where that isn't what it says. It doesn't say he's feeling sorry for him. It says Jesus was angry. And the answer, and then the question was, well, why was Jesus angry? A very sick and diseased man asked to be healed. What would cause his anger? Was he angry because the law had been violated by the leper? It doesn't seem that's the case at all, because he says, of course I will. Of course I want to cure you. So the anger seems to be something that we see glimpses of in the rest of the Gospels from time to time. Jesus' response to the distortion of creation brought about by the evil one and by humanity's cooperation with the evil one. And what does this mean? And what are we saying when we say this? That we go back once again, and we've mentioned this before. In Mark's gospel, Jesus is, in fact, the new creator. We know from the gospel of John that John says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And through him all things came to be, and without him nothing is. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. John is letting us know that it is through the second person of the Blessed Trinity. It is through, in fact, it is through the Word of God, the Logos, who is the Christ, that all things have come to be. And that it is through, it is not that he, the Son, is the sole creator, but the Son is the vehicle of the Trinity's creation of the world. And the origin, of course, of that motivation is from the Father. So that what happens then is that as Jesus is born into the world, as Jesus sees the world in which he lives, he sees that which has come to be through him. We don't know the state of his consciousness, and all of these theological finesse that anyone might have is not going to clarify that for us, because we have to rely completely on the scriptures for that and not on the machinations of the human mind. And there seems to be a process of the humanity of Jesus growing in the understanding of who he is and of his mission. So we don't know exactly what the full consciousness of Jesus is as he faces the leper. But what we do know is that he has a sense of proprietorship over the created order. We see this over and over again. That's why he casts out demons, and that's why he cures. It is the revelation to the disciples and the revelation to the people around him that now the power of the Almighty is here. The demons even say, we know who you are. You are the Holy One of God. You are the one who has power over us. And so they plead with him at times. For instance, in the case of the man possessed by Legion, they plead with him, please, you know, don't do this or don't do that. Please do this for us. And Jesus tends to accommodate, actually, what their desires are. Not so much to strike out against them personally, but to strike out against what they have done to his creation. And that's what happens here in this particular gospel. And that's the source of his anger. And while the scribe who transcribed this might not understand the anger of Jesus, he would have interpreted it that Jesus would have been angry at the leper himself for having violated the law of Moses, and that seemed harsh to him. So he changed it into compassion or feeling sorry or whatever it is. But the word anger itself, the anger of the Lord, is something that really reveals to us something very, very important. It reveals to us a proper attitude toward evil. Now, anger does not necessarily have to turn into violence. And anger does not necessarily have to consume us. But any believing Christian who is not angry at the presence of evil in the world in some sense, somehow or other just doesn't understand what it is and where it comes from, and what an absolute insult that is to the living God. That not only does it inflict pain and misery and suffering on the peoples of the earth, but it is, in fact, a rejection and a blasphemous rejection of the sovereignty of the loving God, of the presence of the living God among us, and of the desire of the living God for the well-being of the world and for the forgiveness of sins. So Jesus now is angry at the distortion of creation and angry that the good that has come forth from the hand of God has now been turned into suffering and ugliness. And so Jesus touches him, which is, of course, unheard of. If he were angry at the leper coming out of the leper colony, then he would never have touched him, because that also is a violation of the law. So that's not where the anger is focused. It's focused on the existence of the misery and the existence of the suffering which evil has forced upon the world. So then he says, of course I want to be cured. And the leprosy left him at once, and he was cured. So that Jesus demonstrates then his ability, his power over the forces of evil, just as we have seen him in Mark curing many diseases. He is casting out demons. He's doing all of this kind of thing, and now he overcomes the dreaded leprosy. But then comes another issue, because Jesus then immediately sent him away and sternly ordered him, "Mind you, say nothing to anyone, but go and show yourself to the priest and make the offering for your healing prescribed by Moses as evidence of your recovery." So here's what he's saying now to the leper. He's doing the same thing that he said to the demons. Be silent about what you have seen and what has happened to you, because if you don't, it will create misunderstanding about who I am. It will create misunderstanding about the mission that I'm on. But in order that you might be free and live with your cure, go and show yourself to the priests. Tell them you've been cured. Get a certificate of healing in order that you can reintegrate back into society again, and you don't have to live in the isolation that you lived in as a leper. So that becomes then very much a part of all of this. And Jesus then is saying this for the good of the leper whom he cured. For without had being known as a leper, he could not reenter society without some kind of a clean bill of health that he would get from the priests. And so he sends him away with the stern warning, don't make a big deal out of this, because if you do, then I cease to become the one who is overcoming evil. I cease to become the new Messiah. I then simply become another wonder worker. And as another wonder worker, people come to me not because they believe in me, but because they're seeking something only for themselves. But the man went away and started talking about it freely and telling the story everywhere, so that Jesus could no longer go openly into any town, but had to stay outside in places where nobody lived. But even so, people from all around would come to him. So here's the consequence then of the disobedience. What the leper did was a disservice to others who were in great need. But Jesus had to avoid the crowds now. He had to stay away from populated places. Those who could have benefited from his healing power and those who could have benefited from his presence among them were now deprived of that because of the disobedience of the leper. And while Jesus did a good thing in curing the leper did not return the favor to the Lord. And so it cost other people because of that, what he had done. Even so, even when Jesus had to stay in deserted places, people would find him and come around and seek him out. And who knows what the motivation was? The motivation there because they thought surely, as Andrew had said, so we have found the Messiah? Or was it because, hey, we found a wonder worker who can cure our ills and so forth, so let's go find him and get it done? It distorts the mission. And I think that to a certain extent, even in contemporary Christianity, this idea of distorting the mission is something that is very, very difficult and does a great disservice to the Lord, a great disservice to the faith, a great disservice to the church. When, in fact, the goodness of the Lord to other people through the believing community, when, in fact, it becomes simply kind of, you know, a place to go. Let's head here and, you know, maybe we can get something. That while the generosity of the church must be there and the generosity of God's people must be there to reach out and to assist those who are suffering, who are in need, who are in financial need, emotional need, spiritual need, whatever it is, certainly that is the mission of the church, and we've always talked about that as the corporal and the spiritual works of mercy. And however contemporary we want to make those things, they are in their essence actually not a substitute for the faith, but a manifestation of the faith. And it's more than just goodwill. It's more than just altruism. And I know that we've said this before, and I have been challenged, what's wrong with altruism? Well, nothing's really wrong with altruism, but let us not call it the good works of the church. For there is intentionality in the good works of the church, and it is that intentionality which brings about a change in the interior life of the person. To just simply be kind of a place for handouts of some kind, without the desire or the care about the people who receive it, in some way, shape, or form, people do a lot of good works for their own gratification. They do a lot of good works because it makes them feel good about themselves. Certainly we find groups of people who love to celebrate themselves and congratulate themselves because of all the good things that they have done. And yet at the same time, one wonders what that has done to the heart of the people who have been on the receiving end of their generosity. Hopefully gratitude for the good that is done to them, hopefully respect for other people, but how much of it draws them back to the real source of goodness and the real source of generosity and the real source of the meaning of life, who is Jesus Christ and Him crucified and risen from the dead. That becomes not to do good works for the sake of proselytizing other people, but to do good works for the sake of awakening within the soul of the recipient the idea that there is a source and a benevolence beyond the giver that is at work in this good work, and that it can, as a matter of fact, then become a means of evangelization. Go back to the leper. Go back to the cures that Jesus has done. These certainly are astounding, and these certainly draw great attention. These certainly are very, very important in the lives of the people who are on the receiving end of His benevolence. But essentially, these are moments of revelation, and that they are moments of revelation. They're not just Jesus being a do-gooder. They are moments of revelation as to the power of who the Messiah is and of the power of the goodness of God in the midst of the world. When the miracles cease to be moments of revelation to the early apostolic community and to the people around them, then they seem to be the story simply of another wonder worker. And that we know that there's all sorts of psychosomatic connections in the healing of illnesses and so forth that we see frequently in faith healing and all of those kinds of things that go on around us. But the idea is the goodness that the Lord does, and therefore the goodness that the church does, is done as a moment of revelation of the truth of the presence of the living God, of the real God, of the one who saves, of the Creator, and of the Redeemer. In this story, then, that we have today, the story of the healing of the leper, we find and we encounter Jesus' anger at the presence of evil in the midst of the world. And certainly, certainly this is legitimate, that if you had made something beautiful and people deliberately came and distorted it and made it ugly, you would certainly, in a way, be upset by that, be distraught by that, be disturbed by that. Jesus, as a human, can't help but have those same kinds of reactions. When he looks at the goodness of God's creation and he sees what the devil and human cooperation with the devil has done to it, and how it has made it a harsh place and an ugly place and a difficult place. And so his anger is part of his response. Yes, I do want to make it whole. I do want to make it good again. I do want to make it like it's supposed to be again. And not only do I want to do that, but I have the power to do that. And so he reveals then who he is in some way by the miracles that he works and the healings that he works. And in so doing, then, we see even here that it's understandable how enthusiastic the leper was. But he was warned. It was difficult. I mean, it was, he sternly ordered him, it says, not to say anything to anyone. And in his disobedience, he therefore deprived others of the same gift that he had received. This is a story about our obedience to the living God also, our obedience to his word, and the word that we know is the word that comes to us from the church, which is the voice of prophecy in the contemporary world, because it is the voice of authority. And that not just in its own frivolity or worldliness or its we find, like any organization, any group of human beings, there you have the, you know, you have the weeds and the wheat growing together, and you wait until the end for it to be sorted out. But in the meantime, the weeds can cause great distortion and great difficulty within the church, which it has done. And yet, at the same time, if we focus on the core, if we focus into the person of Jesus Christ, into the incarnation, into the life, the death, the resurrection of the Lord, if we focus on the Gospels and not on the not on the imaginations of supposedly brilliant human beings, that it is in the Gospels themselves that the person of Jesus is revealed to us as to who he is supposed to be and who he truly is. If we do that, then we remain faithful to the Lord and faithful to the church, and we hear the voice of prophecy in every age then. And in hearing the voice of prophecy in every age, what we then begin to do is become more faithful disciples. And that core, that kernel of fidelity within the church is that which carries us from generation to generation, each with its own problems, each with its own troubles, each with its own difficulties. Yet nevertheless, the fidelity of the church moves on from generation to generation to generation, and in so doing brings the presence of the Lord. Through the disobedience of God's people, we find that that his mission is hindered, and revelation is dulled and made less luminous. And the classic example, using it over and over again, of the mission journeys of St. Francis Xavier, when he goes to Goa off the coast of India, which is a Catholic Portuguese colony in the 16th century, and he writes back to St. Ignatius saying, the lives of the Christians are so scandalous here that no one takes anything I say seriously. So it is the disobedience of the Christian, the sinfulness of the Christian, which makes the presence of Jesus Christ scarce in the lives of other peoples and difficult for them to see or to grasp or to understand. That it is how we live our daily lives, and it is how we interact with other people, that the credibility of the faith becomes present within the world. We can have all sorts of, we know that there are just all sorts of groups who are just thrilled with themselves, but not so much with the presence of the Lord, who do their good works under the cover of religion, only in a way to dim the image of the living God and to dull the sense of the presence of the Lord, and place themselves in the central position, place themselves in the fulcrum of of the goodness of the Lord in the midst of the world. Not something that is a good idea, not something that is faithful, not something that is obedient. So today, then, as we look at this gospel, this very interesting gospel, we find that there is a justification for anger in the face of evil. We are surrounded with evil today. We're surrounded with political evil today, with deception and lies and murder and all of those kinds of things. Dare we be angry with that? Yes, we can be angry with that. But our anger should turn us then into quests for healing and not for revenge. And so while we face this disintegration of our society and this distortion of our society, and we find radical disobedience to the person of Jesus Christ all around us, what is the response to that? The response was Jesus' response. I wish you to be cured. I wish you to be healed. And whatever we can do to bring that about in prayer and in fasting and so forth, we are bound to do for the sake of those who are hurt by this. And if, in fact, we have that anger, it should turn us more dramatically and more radically toward a relationship with the Lord, that we ourselves do not become part of the distortion, that we ourselves do not become part of the evil, that we ourselves do not become part of this great disobedience, and that we instead become supporters, and that we instead become emissaries of the goodness and the graciousness of the Lord in the world in which we live. That we ourselves may lead others to moments of revelation of the truth of the person of Christ through our own obedience, through our own humility, through our own awe and wonder at the fact that Jesus Christ is Lord, has power over evil, sin, and death, and that if we turn to Him, He will save us. And if so, then we will be able to save others as well.
Foundations in Faith is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of Foundations in Faith are available at stgabrielradio.com. There